Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
What's up, everybody? This is Full Draw Friday, episode number 38. Going to be a little bit different of an episode today. Still going to do our segments, but instead of the article segment this week, we got a guest on. His name is Corey Haas. He's the owner of the Bow Shop Bible app. He's talking about all things bow tuning. We got into some hunting specific tuning stuff, arrow setups, broadheads, all that kind of good stuff on that segment of the show today. So really excited about it. We're going to get into a couple other things before that. Before we get into any of it, though, don't forget about our partner on Full Draw Friday, and that is Rodney Hawkins. If you guys are looking for a piece of ground to manage and hunt, Rodney's the guy to talk to. He grew up hunting and fishing in the Southern Illinois area, and now he's putting that love for the outdoors into selling recreational properties as a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. Midwest Farm and Land isn't your average real estate company. They sold over $85 million worth of ground in 2022. With agents like Rodney all over Illinois, they're really a local company with a national reach. For more info on them or any ground that may be available or getting yours listed, you can contact Rodney at 618-925-3153, and he'll get you taken care of. He's also got his own company called RG Outdoors. He's currently got products from Radix Hunting. He's got Camo Dust, which is an all-natural scent elimination product, and he's got Tacticam Trail Camera. So if you guys are interested in any of that, make sure you go to his Facebook page, RG Outdoors, where you can send him a message, or you can contact him at rgoutdoors@yahoo.com, or just call him directly at 618-925-3153, and you can get in any of the stuff that he has in store. Also, our social media is Rich Hunter Outdoors on Facebook and Instagram. We do have a private Facebook group, RHO Podcast Patrons, for exclusive content. And when we do have guests on, when I have enough notice, I can put them on there so you guys can ask them questions specifically. We're going to have Corey back on, hopefully, in the springtime. So if you guys have questions from this episode or later on, you know, about bow tuning or setups or anything like that, I'll give you guys a chance to ask him directly, and I'll ask him on the podcast for you. But that's what that group is good for, the RHO Podcast Patrons group. RichHunterOutdoors.com is our website. We do have apparel on there. We've got food plot seed. We have our all-natural scent products, the tarsal sprays and the calming spray that will be available after the first week of the season. You can follow us on Apple Podcast or Spotify. Leave us reviews there. That helps us out a lot. YouTube, subscribe, like, all that stuff. We're getting really close to the new show that's going to be coming out the second week of the season, the beginning of the second week, into the first week, I guess I should say. I'll have more details on when that's going to drop, first episode, and how it's going to go schedule as we get closer. But if you guys want to be the first ones to see it, go to YouTube, Rich Hunter Outdoors, and subscribe to our channel. Also, if you're on the website, our richhunteroutdoors.com, and you see something you like, use the discount code FULLDRAW, that's all caps, no space, and you get 10% off everything in your first order. All that said, let's get into a really good Full Draw Friday. Special guest, Corey Haas, on this episode. All right, so our first segment, as you guys know, if you've listened to the last few Full Draw Fridays, is the deer activity segment. And right now we're seeing the deer that are starting to disappear or maybe reappear. Maybe you had deer on camera last year that you didn't get all summer. Now you're starting to see them on camera again. Or you had deer on camera all summer and now they're starting to disappear. They have fallen into or are falling into their fall patterns. And that's where you're going to have to relocate those cameras potentially and go find them. Or maybe you already have them in those places and now your cameras are starting to get more active. And you're just going to see that continue to increase over the next couple weeks until they start opening up scrapes really big in the pre-rut. Then you can move your cameras on there and you'll find more bucks. But as far as the activity update goes, It's going to seem like there's less and less of it, but as October gets closer and as it rolls through, they will be more active in the daylight. Every day they're going to be moving more in the daylight. It just might be closer to their bed. So you might have to adjust your cameras, get them closer to those beds to get the bucks that you're wanting to see. In the legislative news for this week, I saw a post. Actually, Nate had shown me a post where a guy that was doing the drone deer recovery had talked to an officer with the IDNR, and he told him that it is illegal to use drones for deer recovery in Illinois. Now, there's been kind of some debate on that, and seemed like it was a kind of a subjective thing depending on what game warden you talk to, whether it was legal or illegal. But this guy had stated that he talked to one. He told him it was illegal to use those in Illinois for deer recovery. So, you know, that might change some things if you were planning on using that this year as a backup to not being able to find your deer. Who knows what's going to happen with that in the future, but I thought that was interesting. There's nothing, I guess, black and white still on it. This is just kind of hearsay. It was a Facebook post, but I did think it was interesting. It was worth noting. You'll probably see some more stuff coming out of that in the near future as that gains more popularity. Drones are getting used for more and more things. It only makes sense that people are starting to use them for recovering deer, especially the thermal drones. But it's going to be whether or not Illinois decides it's legal or illegal and puts that in black and white one way or the other. I would say that's soon to come. So on to the hunting strategy segment for the week. This is going to go right along with the guest we got on with what Corey's talking about, and that's shoot your bow. We got a week till season, basically, just over a week until the season starts. You need to be locked in with your equipment, know where you're shooting, know what your effective range is, and we're going to talk about a little bit of that with Corey. But get out there and just shoot your bow. Get those reps in. Make sure everything's locked in. That way, something he said that you're going to hear here in a minute. You want to eliminate your equipment as an excuse for why you either made a poor shot or missed a deer. So part of that is just getting out there and shooting. And now is the time, especially if you haven't started yet. Hopefully you've been shooting your bow already. If you haven't, you got ground to make up. This is the week to do it. Don't wait and go sit in a tree stand without having shot your bow, or the day of, shoot twice and call it good. Get those reps in. Get that practice in. That way, when it comes down to that last moment, when you're drawn back on that deer, you know the bow is locked in and it's where it needs to be. And that's not going to be an issue for you. So, all that said, we don't have a question for this week. And with the guest on anyway, I think that's he's going to cover a lot of things that people might have questions on anyway. So, we'll roll into the conversation we had with Corey. And then we will get out of here, get into the weekend, and we'll see you guys on Monday. We got Corey Haas here from the Bowshot Bible app. How you doing today, Corey?
I'm doing pretty good. You?
All right, man. Getting closer to season here in Illinois, so we're getting excited about getting out there after them.
It sure is. Yeah, it creeps up quicker before you know it. Yeah, I got to get out and do some preliminary stuff in the woods yet, but looking forward to it big time.
Yeah, that's kind of where we're at too. I'm just now getting my cell cameras all reset up to get them put out, and then I got a couple stands left to hang, so I'm running out of time, but I'll get them done. So. Before we get into too much, though, I want to get kind of a short background on you. And then, like I said, you got the Bowshot Bible app now, but I want to go back and then how did you get started in archery in the first place?
So we were at the Des Plaines Conservation Area up here by the Joliet area. We're doing a pheasant hunt. And my dad's best friend, he found an aluminum arrow with a razorback broadhead attached to it. And back then, us kids rode in the back of the truck. They had a cap on it, but that's where the kids rode back then. So mm-hmm. on that whole ride home, I did nothing but study that arrow. And I'm like, man, this is like nothing I've ever seen before. I really want to learn more about it. So I got into archery then. And by the time I was 15, I had my first setup to where I could actually hunt, and have been hunting ever since. So about 32 years in the tree, really. And I've been doing competitive off and on since about 2005, and okay. I'm really getting more geared up for that this indoor season, so hopefully going to be able to compete with the big boys pretty soon.
Yeah, for sure. So what kind of got you into the competitive field? Was it just an itch to do something a little different with archery? You just loved shooting so much you wanted to do that? How'd you kind of get into that?
Well, I've always been competitive, raised a baseball player and hockey player, and just that competitive drive. Once mm-hmm. I found out that there were 3D shoots and indoors and all that stuff, I wanted to see how good I could do at it, because I felt I could shoot pretty good. So it was a real good test. So yeah, I mean, back then, I'm fortunate enough to have the play at archery club nearby, and I met some really good mentors there that, you know, kind of taught me things that nobody else would learn without mentorship like that back then. I mean, the internet wasn't what it was back then, what it is today. So mm-hmm. it was very nice of me to have those guys that took the time to explain things to me and whatnot. And that kind of like moving forward into the Bowshot Bible, that's kind of like the drive behind that is to help expedite the learning process for those who aren't fortunate as I was to have those mentors. It's all right there at your fingertips, and definitely expedites the tuning part of the equation.
For sure. How did you kind of get into all that side of it with the tuning and all the little intricacies of that? Was that because you started shooting competitively and you just trying to find out how to get that edge, or just kind of becoming part of your equipment, I guess, and seeing how you could get the most out of it? What kind of tripped you into that stuff?
Well, I'm going to have to blame that on Bowtech. So back when I started shooting, I got a 2002 Matthews Conquest 2. Mm-hmm. And I was shooting that for some of the competitive things. But then I wanted to branch out and, you know, see what other hunting bows there were out there for 3D and whatnot. And I ended up getting a bunch of different bows. But one of them was the Bowtech Allegiance. Mm-hmm. This was the first year that they came out with the binary cam system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm husky built and fairly strong, especially back then. So I got an 80-pound version of the Allegiance. And I couldn't get that thing to shoot a good rip-through paper to save my life. And that's when I really went down the rabbit hole on tuning and mm-hmm. what makes things do what they do. And I tried everything and anything, only to have that bow sent back to Bowtech. And they sent me out a tribute to replace it. They owned up to it and said that, yeah, that one was a lemon. Try this tribute out. But that's where I learned all the different, you know, aspects of tuning and stuff. So that bow kind of kickstarted it. And then as I got different bows throughout the years, you know, I started getting into the shimming of the cams, yoke tuning, and the other parts of the setups that affect the Aeroflight. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty much it. And I just, you know, I developed such a passion for it back then because I saw myself getting more and more accurate. And I tell you what, nothing to me is as therapeutic as shooting a bow for an hour or two. Mm-hmm. It just really soothes the soul. I think Fred Bear had a quote, nothing eases a troubled mind like shooting a bow. And that's what it was. And, you know, as soon as you start getting good at it, start doing competitions and placing well, then it just gives you a little bit more drive to, you know, push further and further.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of truth in what, you know, that quote you just said there. That's the reason kind of I love bow hunting so much. And I actually don't, part of the reason I don't gun hunt anymore is just shooting the bow, that part of it. Not only like when it comes down to the moment and you're shooting at the deer, but the fact that you have to get out there and practice. So it almost like makes me make time to shoot my bow when otherwise maybe I wouldn't as much. And I just enjoy doing it so much. So that's a big part of archery hunting. And I assume that it's that way for a lot of people.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There are a lot of factors that go into a successful hunt, but, being comfortable behind your bow and being capable, like the main point is being able to eliminate your equipment as part of the reason why something could go wrong. That's right. What I tell people. I say you owe it to yourself. You owe it to the animal that you're hunting mm-hmm. to get your equipment as dialed in as possible. Because during the moment of truth, there are factors that come into play. I mean, one is the equipment and the tune job done on the equipment. You know, another factor is your form. Yep. Do you have sound form? Are you executing the shot well? Are you having, you know, because that affects Aeroflight as well. Mm-hmm. And then the third one, well, I say three out of four. So the third is the decision making out in the field. So when do you take that shot? Is that animal broadside? If it's quartering towards you, is that a good choice to make?
Right.
And then the fourth one that really goes unadvertised is, did you clear your shooting lanes? How's your stand set up? Because you could mm-hmm. have all the other three factors absolutely perfect. You could be shooting, you know, half dollar size groups at 60 yards. But if you didn't take the time to get on the woods in September to make sure those shooting lanes are cleared, then it might all be for naught. And that happened to me a couple of years back. You know, I had a pretty good buck. It's probably up in the, I'd like to say 160s, 170s. And I seen him. It was pre-rut rut. I mean, he mounted a doe right in front of me. I was respectful. I let him finish his business. He walked up yards and he stopped and I took the shot. I had the GoPro running and I hit him high and I'm like, what happened? It ended up being a loin shot. He didn't react to the shot. I know my capabilities and I know I could beat their reactions out to about 35 yards at my speed. My effective yardage is 35 yards and closer. And that's actually a calculator inside the Bowshot Bible Lab. You can put your arrow speed in. It'll tell you, based off of research and the speed of sound and the animal's reaction, how far per your arrow speed can that animal be out there before they realize a shot is taking place. This is an alert deer.
Right.
They realize the shot's taking place. Gravity kicks in. They drop down. They load up on them back legs and they pound forward. Right. So I knew I had all my bases covered there.
Right.
But what had happened was I hit a quarter inch diameter branch.
Yep.
And it was just enough to deflect that arrow up. And I never did find him. And it really sucked. But I have nobody to blame but myself, because I didn't put the time in. I didn't go out there. I didn't look at all the possible shooting lanes. And I didn't make sure that every little branch was clear. And I did not see that branch. And that is what happened.
Yep. Like you said, it doesn't matter if you're driving tacks at 60 yards. When you hit a branch, everything like that goes out the window.
Yeah. Yeah. That is such a big factor. And you don't have to be an Olympic archer to clear a shooting lane.
Right.
At all.
Right. Right.
You just got to put the time in it. And it's always good to have a buddy with you. Get up in the tree stand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, walk to your left. Now back up a little bit. Grab that sapling right there. Okay, cut it. You know, it's pretty simple, but time's precious. Sometimes people don't make the time.
Yeah, I'd say a good number of people who probably just climb down out of the tree for the last time last season, and they never go back until the first time they're going to hunt it this season, and then you get up there and you can't shoot anywhere, or you think you can, and then something like that does happen. But when it comes to shooting lanes, that point you made there, I always try to go with somebody else just for the simple fact if you can make them be the deer and you can see things that you may not have seen before. If you have them walking down a trail you think the deer is going to be on, or even somewhere you think they just might be, and then they might see something that you can't even from up in the tree. Like at a certain angle looking up, they might see something different even from what you're seeing. It's just, that's a big help when it comes to that stuff. And it is so important.
Oh, yeah.
But I want to talk a little bit about the setup. Kind of, we'll talk Midwest whitetails. So, you know, just the general average whitetail in the Midwest. What kind of setup? We'll go arrows and broadheads first, like as your preferred, or maybe it varies depending on the bow, you know, and the poundage and all that. But what kind of setup are you running? And then I guess that's probably your preferred, but what would you like to see more people utilizing over some of the maybe misinformation that's out there?
Yeah, so the most important thing is arrow flight and having the bow tuned. And the reason that is because A, it helps accuracy, but B, it helps penetration. If your arrow is porpoising or fishtailing in flight, it'll twang out the kinetic energy as it burrows into the deer, and you might not get the penetration that you wanted. So the main thing is having tight pins, because in the moment of truth, you should have three things with you every time you go to the tree: your bow, your release, and a rangefinder. That rangefinder doesn't get tucked into my pocket until I'm ready to, you know, clamp onto the D-loop, draw back for that shot. But sometimes when we range like a clearing, they might not always follow that path to that clearing. So they instead of being at 30 yards, they might be at 34.
Right.
They might even be closer. The tighter your pins, the more room for error you have with yardage estimation. So to me, if you can get up there speed-wise, you're going to beat their reactions. And hitting an animal that is not tense or starting to move is like shooting a beat-up old block target compared to a brand-new Reinhardt target.
Right.
It's going to be easier to pass through. And we're not shooting for the shoulder. We're taking good broadside shots right behind the armpit there, mm-hmm. right at the intersection of the heart and the lungs. So that is that's one thing to look at. What are your speeds, and can you shoot quicker if possible? Mm-hmm. So arrow weight affects your speed. Mm-hmm. Now in the Midwest with whitetails, I believe if you're shooting 65 to 70 pounds or higher, then you're absolutely fine with a mechanical broadhead. Right. You should have no problem passing through. The toughest thing that you should encounter is two rib bones, mm-hmm. and then the organs, which are between the ribs.
Right.
If you don't hit that, then you hit a little far forward. And if you hit back, if you don't beat their reaction and they bound forward, then you may encounter liver, guts, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that is what I say for 65 and higher poundage-wise. Anytime you get below 65, and I haven't done the testing on this, but I plan on doing it one day. I plan on actually measuring the resistance of a deer's body. I'm talking hide, rib bones, organs, rib bones, and hide. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going with lab radar and chronographs. I'm actually going to be able to measure the resistance and actually tell people what they can shoot at different poundages. But right now, before that is done, that's what I recommend, 65 pounds and higher, you're okay with a mechanical. Anytime you go below that, you might want to look at a fixed blade broadhead, because I've done extensive testing back in 2018 on 11 different heads. And one of the tests I did was a Pierce test, and I lowered a drum onto an upright broadhead. I did it upright so the mechanicals could deploy, and I measured how many pounds it took to pierce that fabric. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty surprising how many pounds it took to deploy, let's say, a Schwacker,
right.
Grim Reaper versus like a Grim Reaper Micro Hades Pro, which is a fixed blade, really sharp head. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're below that, you might be able to use that advantage of piercing kind of a target with the fixed blades. Now you're going to sacrifice the cut factor. Mm-hmm. You might be at an inch and an eighth diameter cut versus a 2-inch cut, which is a big deal, but it's always nice to get a full pass through. So the bloodletting, which was another test, can take place. So the deer is able to bleed out. Mm-hmm. If you hit them kind of high and you don't have a pass through, that blood will pool up and it's going to make your tracking job really, really tough.
Yep.
So that's where I stand on the broadhead choice. 65 pounds and less, I would consider a good fixed blade. 65 right. pounds higher, you have absolutely no problem with a two-blade rage. Two-blade rage is my favorite. Mm-hmm. We lose 8 pounds of, kinetic energy. Let's just say it took 8 pounds to deploy the two-blade rage compared to the Schwacker, it was like 26 pounds.
Wow.
A lot of the fixed blades were right around a pound. So you do lose a little bit of penetration going to a mechanical, but the advantages of the big 2-inch broad cut, especially with whitetail deer going through solely ribs and organs,
right,
is well worth it. Now you go out west and you elk hunt, you got a different story. When mm-hmm. I go out west, I'm still shooting about 315 feet per second, and the arrow that I shoot is hell. The spike elk I killed was with a 393 grain arrow, but I did have a fixed blade on it.
Right.
And he was kind of quartering away a little bit, and I did bury it into the opposite knuckle of the shoulder. And I don't care what you're shooting, you're not going through that.
Yeah, right.
But it definitely got the job done. And that was also a situation where I ranged him at 35, but I had to put the rangefinder down, and he kept walking. And mm-hmm. by the time he stopped, I wasn't quite sure where he was. But my pins were tight enough to where I was still in the vitals, and he lived for another 14 seconds and just went down.
Right.
I mean, he went 80 yards or so. It was a great hunt.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what you're looking for on that for sure. So you're looking at, when it comes to the mechanical versus a fixed blade, is having enough kinetic energy to make up for whatever you are losing when it opens. So that's kind of why you're looking at 65 pounds or higher on a whitetail.
Yeah. Yeah. And And I know that a couple experts in the field, Joel Maxfield for one, I mean, his wife shoots mechanicals at a far lesser draw weight, and they've had tons of success. Mm-hmm. But just play it safe. And, you know, I 65 or less, until I do the experiments, I'm going to say, you know, if you're under that 65 pounds, it might be worth your time to get good with the field or the fixed blade broadhead. But I mean, experience is going to tell all. I mean, if you're shooting 60 pounds and you're ripping right through them, mm-hmm. with fixed blades, okay, maybe try mechanical and see how that reacts. I mean, if you're hitting them, if your accuracy is there and you're not hitting the shoulder and you're good with your point of aim, then try a two-blade rage. Until I have those experiments done, I can't say for certain, but just to be cautious, I'm saying, you know, 65 pounds and up are definitely a green light for like a two-blade rage.
Yeah, I think that's probably a pretty fair assessment. And obviously, you have more experience with it than I have. I've shot, you know, my fair share of deer with both fixed blade and mechanicals, and I've killed deer with both, and I've lost deer with both. And really, in my experience, you're going to be... You have more room for error forward with a fixed blade to a certain point. I mean, there's certain shots, certain angles that you shouldn't be taking anyway. And you're going to have more room for error back with the expandable. But I do believe that...
Exactly.
I do believe that you have a better chance forward with a mechanical than you do have back with a smaller cutting diameter fixed blade, if that makes sense, to efficiently kill the deer and recover it. They might both die, but when it comes to recovery, I think that's the big thing.
As long as you're not hitting the thickest part of the shoulder bone or like a knuckle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have shot deer through the scapula with the two-blade rage and had absolutely no problem.
Right.
But you are spot on. If you're shooting a tooth of the arrow or a slick trick and you hit them in the liver or you get some guts, yeah, good luck, because you have a very small hole going through it, mm-hmm. versus like a 2-inch dagger. Or I say it's like, would you rather be stabbed with a 1-inch dagger or a 2-inch pirate sword? I mean, the pirate sword is going to leave a gash.
Yep.
And the more you could tear up, the better. And when you do hit them back further, yeah, the 2-inch cut of a mechanical is definitely going to help out.
Mm-hmm. So what are we looking at? You know, you said you shot that elk with a 380, was it 383? Grain arrow?
393.
Okay, 393. So what are we looking at on your setup for whitetails? Total arrow, broadhead, and everything. What kind of weight are you looking at?
Yeah, so Maxima XRZ. Mm-hmm. It's the red zone arrow. It's the XRZ Select is what I use for both elk and whitetail. I shoot the same arrow, the same exact weight, 93 grains. The only difference is the choice of broadheads.
Right.
Yeah, so I killed that elk. And then a month later, I killed a real nice whitetail up here, a big old buck, and had no issues with either one of those. Mm-hmm. But one of the main things that people don't understand is the arrow flight with the broadhead attached. So there are couple different schools of thought on it, but my research has ended me up with the lipstick tuning process. So like the old school way is to dial in your broadheads to match the point of impact with your field points,
right?
And that is doable. Okay, so but most guys when they shoot their field point and then, you know, shoot the broadhead, they're going to see a difference of point of impact. Then they could adjust their equipment to have the points of impact be very close. So what I did is I did just that, and then I took the broadhead arrow and I put it through paper. I knew my field point was perfect bolt hole. Mm-hmm. What I did then is I did my lipstick tuning technique before I even knew that I was going to call it that. I took some lipstick and I put a little dab at the tip of the broadhead, dead center. Mm-hmm. Then I traced the edge of the veins. And I said, okay, they're hitting at the same spot at the range, I want to see how the actual arrow flight is. So I put that broadhead arrow with the aid of the lipstick through paper. And what the lipstick does is it helps you to see exactly where the center of your knock end passes through the paper in relation to the center of your broadhead. Mm-hmm. And what I noticed was, even though I matched the point of impact at 20 yards with my field point, that broadhead flight was not desirable. I had a low right tear about an inch and a half. And I said, well, why is that? Well, then I came to realize, well, anytime you put wings on the front of the arrow, it's actually a different arrow. So you might as well paint it a different color. It's going to react differently during the shot. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because there's a lot of left to right movement during the power stroke of the shot, and some corrective, kind of like fishtailing bends when it leaves the string. And when you put blades on the front of it, it resists the air and it's going to fly differently. So with the aid of the lipstick, I then tuned my bow to where I had absolutely perfect broadhead flight. And when you do that, okay, you get that done at about 12 feet. Of course, get an old beat up block target or something like that that you could put a broadhead in, because broadheads are not very easy on targets, right?
Right.
Once you get dialed in at like 12 feet, which is the distance that I determined to have the maximum rip, then back up to 20 feet or so. Just check them in two spots just to make sure that it's perfect. Mm-hmm. And once you do that, you are going to see tighter groups with your broadheads. You're going to see increased penetration, better distance. I mean, it's going to raise your game big time. And very few people do that, and that's why I'm proud to have that lipstick tuning in the tuning section of the Bowshot Bible app, because that's going to help people out. And that also completely destroys certain influencers out there that sell tip replacement kits as like the means of tuning their equipment.
Right.
That just throws that right in the garbage, because, okay, so what you're doing with tip replacement is you're changing the resistance of that arrow. You're putting more mass at the end of it.
Right.
And that's going to change the bend of the arrow during the power stroke. And you may find a spot or a tip weight that gives you the best reaction. And that's what this one particular influencer is really pushing and selling. But the thing is these guys that are new to the sport, or even guys that have been shooting for a long time, but just buy into it, they go with that. But once they put a broadhead on, and a lot of these guys are shooting like Iron Wills or some pretty aggressive heads.
Right.
Once they put that on their arrow, then their tune is out the window, because they just changed the arrow completely. Like I said, painted a different color.
Yep.
And now, you know, if they don't know how to tune, they're going to have erratic broadhead flight. And they're going to need that to be a quote unquote plan B arrow. And they're right. going to need it to 700 grains, 650 or higher, because, you know, they might not hit where they were aiming, with extra weight, they might not have been inside that effective yardage to where the animal does react. And they hit it. Well, they shouldn't hit it in the shoulder. Most times deer are going to bound forward, but if they're just a lousy shot, and then they're going to need that weight to try to penetrate something. But yeah, I think that's fading away. I think that guy's 15 minutes of fame has been drawn out too long.
Yeah.
But the way I explained it with the recommendations of heads and having tighter pins and doing the lipstick tuning, I think that's going to set you up for success more than any tip replacement thing from some guy that doesn't really even know much about tuning.
Yeah.
So that's why it's important to learn how to tune your bow, because when those guys do put the broadheads on, getting back to the tip replacement guys that buy those kits, then they're back to erratic arrow flight. And now you have to tune your bow. So if you have to tune your bow, why not just start off with
exactly
an arrow that you want to shoot
and
learn how to tune your bow and get that perfect flight from the get go, shoot a plan A arrow.
Yeah.
Don't worry about a plan B.
Yeah. It's kind of like anything else. You know, if you want the actual good results, you're probably going to have to put in the actual good work to get them. And like what you're talking about, a lot of people think about how a broadhead will cut through an animal or something, but they don't necessarily think about how it cuts through the air. And then that changes it, like you're saying, just painted a different color. So I would assume, like, what are your thoughts on, I don't know if Rage does them or not, but I know like G5 sends them out. I think Grim Reaper does. I know Schwacker did. I would assume Rage does. The practice tips for your arrows, do you say those are fine, or just shoot the actual broadhead when you're tuning?
I actually have some practice Rage heads, and I don't know that they include them anymore with a pack of broadheads.
Okay.
But I do the lipstick tuning with the practice head. I think it's close enough in weight,
right,
and shape. And you'll be surprised that when you increase the length of the arrow, because the ferrule on those are longer than like a field point.
Right.
When you increase it and do have 5/8 of diameter in flight with the blade sucked, it still does impact the aerodynamic reaction of the arrow.
Oh, yeah.
And they have to fine tune the tuning to get absolute perfect flight with those even.
Yep.
Now, one other thing with the fixed blades is having your blades oriented the same way is very important as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could watch in slow-mo that, you know, if you have them out of rotation, arrow A compared to arrow B, that could lessen the resistance to the air and have a different flight characteristic. So I always, like when I'm cutting arrows and going to put the inserts in, I'll screw a broadhead in and I'll mark the insert and I'll mark the arrow. And I say to myself, okay, when I put the field point on this insert and do my ring of glue around the base of it and twist it and push it in, I want to end up with this mark on this mark. That way I know my broadhead will be oriented the same way with all the other ones. So that's another really good tip. And that will just make your groups much more consistent with broadheads.
Yeah, that is a good point. I say that that probably gets overlooked a bunch, especially if you're talking about buying like just already pre-cut, pre-insert arrows off of the Walmart shelf. You're going and screwing a broadhead on. Who knows? You might have four different. They might end up four different ways if you're shooting four arrows. And like you said, that can change things from one arrow to another pretty significantly. Might be the difference in killing a deer and not, or finding him and not.
Yeah. And that does put you in a tough situation when they're already, when the inserts are already in.
Yep.
There are a lot of heads that sometimes they'll have like an O-ring to where you can kind of tighten it a little bit more or a little bit less.
Right.
And that's what I've done in the past. You could also kind of file down the, you know, the top of the insert to get a little bit more rotation in.
Mm-hmm.
There are some tricks to do to accomplishing that. But if you get two or three that are good, then you should be just fine.
Yeah.
And I mean, truthfully, I mean, you don't need any more than six arrows to start any hunting season, and you should be able to get a couple of them that are close enough to where you could get the alignment perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't want to skip over, you've mentioned the app a few times. Tell us a little bit or a lot about the app, how you kind of, you said you kind of decided to come up with it just to help people with the whole tuning process and all that. What was your, was that the main driving factor behind it? And then just kind of tell us what, at least give us a little bit of a insight into what's in the app.
Yeah, so I had shootingtime.com for a long time, and I still do. That was going to be a hunting show that I was going to do locally here back before hunting shows were what they are now.
Right.
That kind of fell through. And then I continued forward with the competitive archery. And what I found myself doing was going to the ranges just to do a 15-minute thing to my bow. And I would see the results of local pro shops walk, you know, guys with bows that were tuned at local pro shops walk in the door, and they weren't set up right. So I ended up, you know, a 15-minute trip to the archery club or the range would end up being an hour and a half. So what I originally did is I put everything that I knew about archery and tuning onto shootingtime.com, which there still are a lot of good tips up there. And I did that. So, you know, if I met these people at the range, I could say, hey, the first thing is this, and fix your equipment a little bit. And I said, if you need any more help, go check out shootingtime.com. If you got any questions, feel free to call. Mm-hmm. So that's what it started out as, kind of like a pay it forward website. As affiliate marketing websites became more prevalent, I saw my traffic decrease. And right around that same time, I met my developer friend through a friend, and we're having some pizza and some beer, and we're talking about what I do and what he does. And I'm like, dude, I got a great idea for an app. And next thing you know, Bowshot Bible was born. So the main drive behind the Bowshot Bible is to make a more accurate, competitive archer and a more lethal hunter out in the field. And that is by checking off one of the boxes that you need to check off each year. And that is mastering the equipment, not having equipment to blame. So the rundown of what's in the app is, first and foremost, the bow spec database. That's a database of bow specs. And for anybody who works on equipment, you need to know the axle to axle length. That's the main thing to get a bow back into spec. But we have the axle to axle length, and we have the brace height and the IBO speeds at a minimum. And with some bows, we have the string and cable lengths. So that's a good resource there. Then we have the tools tab, and we have some really nice ballistic calculators in there, FOC calculators, a stabilizer wizard for the competitive archer, a cause and effect tweaking cables page. So when you are messing with your equipment, you will know what adding a twist to the cable or the string does. Mm-hmm. I'm probably missing some things. There's a sight tape and pin gap wizard. It's kind of a bare bones thing, but if you set up your bow to be able to hit at 20 and at, like, let's say 60, mm-hmm. You could take a piece of paper, transfer those marks, and use that tool to fill in the rest of the yardages. And then one of the latest additions is that effective yardage calculator. So that's very, very important. We've already touched, but you will be able to put your speed in there, and it uses a formula with the speed of sound and the speed of the arrow and the average reaction time of a white-tailed deer. We've got that at about a quarter of a second, and that can be adjustable if mm-hmm. you're Hawaii for axis deer or going out west for elk, you know, down in Texas where they might be a little more skittish around feeders. So that's going to give you a good idea of, you know, how far is safe to take a shot. Now, nothing is ever 100%, but that's going to give you a good idea. And if you're armed with at least that, you're going to have a better chance than some guy that just doesn't know, because you could have new guy that goes out there and he's got a buck slowly following a doe and he's at like 40 yards and he's got to stop him. So he does the mat or whistles,
right?
And he stops 40, he's already drawn back, but you know, little did he know that that's outside his effective yardage. And by the time the arrow gets there, that deer has dropped and bounded forward, and now he's got a gut shot deer. So that should be an eye opener for a lot of guys going out into the field. Now, below that on the app, we have archery knots. We cover every knot that you need to know how to tie. There's animated GIFs and videos on most of the knots. Mm-hmm. And then you got your installations. It shows you the proper way to install everything that you can put on the bow. And there's a very nice section on first, second, and third axis of your sight and how to set them properly. Then we jump into one of the best sections of the app, is the tuning section. Mm-hmm. So that we cover every aspect of tuning. I mean, it goes down into some very fine tuning processes like creep tuning and torque tuning, but it's, and I just put a walkthrough video at the beginning of that, and that should explain that section. There are a few really good links in there, and one of them is understanding arrow flight. And what that does is about an 18-minute video that breaks down everything that we could do to the bow or the arrow and how it affects the dynamic reaction of the arrow in flight. And it shows it at 1,000 frames a second. So that's the tricky thing about archery is, like, you know, you shoot through paper and you get a certain rip, and you know you're supposed to move the rest this way or that way, or shim the cams this way or that way, but you don't understand why, because it happens so fast you can't see it. So what this does is it breaks it down, and you could actually see what's actually going on. So you not only know what to do, but you understand why you're doing it. So that's a nice thing there in the tuning section. There's a bow tuning timeline that chronologically breaks down the process, and everything in there that's in bold is actually in the app. So that's just a great reference there. Mm-hmm. And then at the bottom of the page, there is the broadhead tuning, and that's where we go over the two different methods of dialing in your broadhead arrow at the range, and then with a lipstick tuning. So we show you the old school way of how to force it to have the same point of impact as a field point, but then we show the preferred way of the lipstick tuning, and that, for anybody that's going to get out and hunt, man, that is a must see right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, below the tuning section is the arrow section, and we cover everything and anything related to dynamic reaction of the arrow and arrow building and the three different software programs that are out there. There's tutorials on it. We really take the mystique out of it and show you how to record the data and how to build that perfect arrow, either the program perfect method to where the program says, okay, this length with this tip weight, this should react perfect for your bow. Or we start with that and we do a cut and trim method to where we really, really dial that arrow in to your particular setup. The one thing about the app that's kind of tough for me to explain to people when I'm doing these shows or like a TAC event is, you know, there's so much in the app, and to try to explain it to people, it's tough. It'd be a lot easier if there was only like three or four things, but literally there's over 2 years worth of work initially into making this app. And there's so much in there that it is so beneficial, especially if you're going to do this for a long period of time. You need to learn how to master your equipment, and these here are the tools.
Yeah.
Especially with the pro shops shutting down. I mean, I know in our state we lost probably around 10. You've got to be able to learn how to do this. I mean, if you want to be as good as you can be.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. No doubt.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll say is that there's a bonus section to where we have some in-app only podcasts where I talk to guys like Nick Cappers, who's a professional archer, Tim Gillingham. We had a whitetail hunting consultant on there. That was a great talk there. I do some product spotlights, some do-it-yourself projects, and some bow spotlights as well. We also do a monthly Zoom meeting, which we had it last night. Every month, guys could click on the link from the bonus section and join us at 7 o'clock, third Thursday of the month. And we could talk tuning. We could find out about what's coming up with the app, new sections that are coming about. And yeah, it's really a good way to have some good discussions. And that's also a venue to where I'm going to have some professional archers come on in, and some professional hunters as well. So guys that have been proven out in the field. So
yeah,
that's it. Nutshell, there's actually more than that, but you know, I know we're limited here, but that's a good explanation of what the app has to offer. And that's also available as a subscription monthly. It's $3.99. So less than a cup of coffee and a donut. Kind of makes sense. I priced it low, so the average hunter can afford it. And if it's something that, you know, they have for a month or two and they're like, okay, I think I got it, then they could cancel it, and that's that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, hey, if you guys are out there and you're wanting to learn how to tune your bow, or you're needing some help with it, for sure download the Bow Shop Bible app and check that out. And if you got any questions, I'm sure is there a section in there where they can get a hold of you for that?
Yeah, on the app itself, the About tab, you click on that, and then there's a feedback link, which you could leave feedback directly from the app that will go directly to me. We also have a Facebook page, Bowshot Bible, and we have a Facebook group. So the group is where people can jump on and post questions about anything that they're having problems with, and they get help very quickly.
Yep, awesome, man. Well, hey, I appreciate you coming in, taking the time out of your day to do this and talk about this. I definitely want to have you back on again so we can get even more in-depth on some of this stuff. But I thought that was really good. I think it's going to help people out. And again, thanks for coming on, man.
No problem at all, man. I do appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. All right, man. We'll see you.
All right, Ken. Thank you.